This is The Sun on the Strip, and I'm Brock Radke, entertainment writer at the Las Vegas Sun, here to get you caught up on all the news and fun this week from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip. Since there was no show last week, we're going to catch up on some older news, too, but we have to start with today's announcement of a new resident headliner at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace, Sting. My Songs, the Las Vegas residency, will open on May 22nd, 2020. That's right, that's next year, although tickets will go on sale Friday, May 3rd. That's next week. There are 16 shows going on sale. They're in May, June, August, and September of next year. Sting is about to embark on a European spring and summer tour, also called My Songs, after he wraps up some dates with Shaggy in the UK in May. And he's releasing My Songs, the album, on May 24th, which will be made up of some contemporary interpretations of some of the biggest hits of his career. I'm sure there'll be some Police stuff on there as well as his solo work. So clearly Sting is ready to do the career retrospective thing if he hasn't done so already, and what better place to do it than Center Strip at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. You can read more about this announcement today at lasvegassun.com. This is the second new residency announced for the Coliseum since the venue unveiled its plans recently to close for renovations this summer. A couple of weeks ago, Journey was announced to be playing some shows later this year, although those shows are scheduled only for October at the moment. It is expected that Journey is going to sell a bunch of tickets and announce some more shows at the Coliseum. Also announced last week, the venue is going to bring back Steve Martin and Martin Short for another comedy show on October 6th. I think we're going to see more really big names coming to the Coliseum soon as it kind of steps up its game and reasserts itself as the dominant resident room on the Strip. Of course, it has to compete now with Park Theater at Park MGM. This week at the Coliseum, James Taylor returns for another three-show set, and I actually had the chance to speak with him on the phone for a pretty extensive interview before he opened his shows at the Coliseum on April 17th. And I would love to share part of that conversation with you.
Has Vegas kind of been after you to do something like this for a while?
We have been in discussions to do it for a while, and you know, it just took a while. Things often do, and I'm glad we finally got the right partner and in Caesars and in this theater. You know, I'm getting this is an age of sort of intense communication with my audience because of social media, and I'm getting word that people are coming from Italy, that people are coming from Brazil, that people are coming from Iceland. You know, it's a great opportunity, you know, and I think people want to come and see what Las Vegas is all about too, you know. So
This does, other than the fact that it's Las Vegas, does just playing this many shows in the same venue over that period of time give you a chance to kind of switch things up and maybe do some things differently on different nights?
You know, we can probably what we've been looking at is having a few spaces in the set where we can change things up. Exactly that. But make no mistake, this type of performance is not like jazz improvisation where I call out you know, what we're doing that particular night after we get on the stage, and where we play no song ever the same. Our priority is to present this material in a way that gives the audience the best possible experience of it, And what that has come to mean for me is basically sort of perfecting the set and building in dynamics to it that give it relief and that give it a kind of a dynamic that makes for essentially an evening of theater. So and to back it up with the audiovisual stuff that we've been perfecting for years. So we will hope for some spontaneity, and a lot of that comes from the audience too. But at the same time, our framework is something we pay a lot of attention to. You know what the mm-hmm. basic shape of the show is.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've got that phenomenal band coming in for these shows too. Any chance of any special guests, maybe?
Well, I don't have any other than, as you say, the remarkable community. Of players that I'm lucky to surround myself with. Aside from that, I can't say that we've got anything planned, but you never know. Those things certainly do happen, and also it's been a sort of a focus of mine to show off this group of players that I've got, because they really on their own and each one of them in their own right has a career, has a body of work. Mike Landau, my guitarist, is known in Asia and in Europe as he's really renowned, and the same thing with Larry Goldings, who plays our keyboards, and the Steve Gadd has and the other members of my rhythm section are a band and tour on their own as well. So, that's Lou Marini and Walt Fowler are our horn players. And, Lou has his own following, there mm-hmm. people definitely. And the same thing is true for Arnold McCullough, my old time pal and companion, touring road dog buddy for back into the mid 70s. I also want to present them,
it's mm-hmm.
yeah
You touched on this a little bit already, but Las Vegas is kind of a greatest hits type of city, maybe even more than some other places that you play more frequently, partially because you get that potential for a completely different audience every night in Las Vegas. At this stage of your career, I wonder, how do you balance, playing those songs that a lot of people want to hear versus playing songs that you want to play?
Yeah, it's absolutely... It's a definite phenomenon. You do feel coming to a residency like this that there's an element of retrospective in it, where you want to sort of present the thing as a personal history, and there's also a definite, I not only in Vegas but in general, and when I'm touring, I get the sense that the audience has come to hear, a couple of dozen greatest hits sort of songs that are James Taylor music to them. So we do build the show with those songs in it. I'd say that a good third to a half of the set is if you've got greatest hits to play, you definitely play them. That's how it goes. and particularly when you're looking to put, you know, put forward your best foot and you know, present yourself in as complete a light as possible. So yeah, there'll be a lot of that. There is a tendency to do the hits, and then there are songs that we do that may not be that well known, but that we know work really well live, and so that makes up another third of the show, and then just things that we like to play that are great for us to play. That's another line of stuff, another bag, as it were. But there'll definitely be room for the hits.
Has that sort of expectation from the audience influenced your writing over the years, or has that something that you've won't allow to influence your songwriting?
You know, my songwriting has always been something that I have so little control over. You know, it seems to be something that I channel, but that sometimes I can summon, but I can't direct it. And you know, what comes through is I'm happy for whatever seems to be generated, you know. So the subject matter or the content of the songs it makes its own way, but the thing is that there is definitely a thing that develops over time. I remember starting out without an audience at all, with no idea of who the songs were directed towards, and just basically writing them for myself. But as they're picked up by the public and received, it creeps backwards, creeps upstream in the writing process, where you start to think about, well, how are people going to react to this, or, you know, what kind of effect is this going to have? And I find that that's not really very helpful, because it's always best for me to be as surprised as the audience is by what comes through. You know, that's what you're looking for.
That was me talking about songwriting with James Taylor, in case you lost track of exactly what was going on. How super awesome is that? James Taylor performs at the Coliseum April 24th, 25th, and 27th, and then he's back next week for 6 more shows in May. Yes, expect more big entertainment news coming from Caesar's Palace, but we also missed some big business news from Caesar's Entertainment last week. Company named Tony Rodio as the new CEO. He's coming over from Affinity Gaming, where he's been CEO since October. He's been an executive in the industry for years, including jobs at Harrah's, which of course is now Caesars, at the Atlantic City Hilton, for Penn Gaming, and for Tropicana Entertainment. This is certainly not a surprise move, as current CEO Mark Fersor's departure was announced in November. And the infamous corporate raider, Carl Icahn, who started acquiring more stock in Caesars Entertainment in December and worked his way up to about 20% control in the company, struck a deal with the board in March that basically mandated Caesars need to select a new CEO pronto, or else Icahn would get another board seat and even more control. Board chairman James Hunt said, quote, "Tony is a respected and highly accomplished executive who has successfully built and grown businesses in our industry throughout his career. We are confident that Tony has the vision and depth of operating experience to lead our talented senior management team as Caesars continues its long history of delighting our guests, fostering a welcoming and rewarding workplace for our team members, and creating value for shareholders and other stakeholders." End quote. Caesars, of course, operates Las Vegas casino resorts on and just off the Strip, Caesars Palace and the Nobu Hotel, the Cromwell, the Link, Planet Hollywood, Bally's Paris, Harrah's, the Flamingo, and the Rio. So there's quite a bit of buzz right now that some Vegas casinos could be bought and sold in the near future. The Rio continues to be on that list. But this week we got confirmation of an actual transaction. The Lucky Dragon, $160 million Chinese-themed boutique hotel and casino that opened on the corner of Las Vegas Boulevard and Sahara Avenue in late 2016 and closed early last year, was sold on Monday for $36 million to Don Ahern, chairman and CEO of construction equipment company Ahern Rentals, who reportedly plans to change the name, of course, and convert the Lucky Dragon to a non-gaming hotel and conference space. This place was built by developer Andrew Fonfa, who also created the Allure condo tower just next door. Lucky Dragon opened with 200 hotel rooms and a 27,000 square foot casino and some pretty great restaurants. Everything designed to attract tourists coming from Asia and from Southern California. Failed to attract any bids when it went up for auction last year, so consensus is it's a good thing that it's been sold so that it can become something else very soon. There was another rumor flare up last week. Multiple outlets reported the Cosmopolitan is for sale. The Blackstone Group acquired the Cosmo for $1.73 billion from Deutsche Bank in 2014. It famously opened in December 2010. Everybody always refers back to the Cosmopolitan as the last ground-up new casino that has been built on the Strip. But Cosmo struggled financially, of course, for years post-recession, despite being a very cool and popular Strip location. It's in much better financial shape now. Bloomberg reported it could fetch $4 billion or more after the upgrades and renovations it has conducted in recent years. Yeah, that's a lot. So feel free to speculate wildly on who might want to buy Cosmo. But remember, it's a luxury resort. It's squeezed between Bellagio and Aria. And so if MGM Resorts were to grab it, it would own pretty much everything on that Western Strip block from Flamingo Road to Tropicana Avenue. Heading back to the North Strip, the Drew, the 67-story resort and casino project being developed at the former Fontainebleau site, announced last week that New York-based design firm Diller, Scofidio, and Renfro will be the design architect for the project, and will be converting that big blue phantom of a building into something new and fresh. Not a lot of details about the creative direction that the Drew will be taking, although the word quixotic was used in the press release, so make of that what you will. But the big thing that most news outlets picked up from this info release is that the Drew confirmed it is scheduled to open on the Strip in the second quarter of 2022. When it was originally announced by its developer, the Witkoff Group, it was expected to open in late 2020, along with several other big, big prominent Vegas projects that you already know about, but it looks like it's getting pushed back, and, you know, big deal. As long as it's moving forward, it's all good. Also announced last week, the NHL Awards will be returning to Las Vegas on June 19th at a new venue, and that's the Mandalay Bay Event Center, which just completed another round of renovations. Or really, this is all kind of one big renovation project that's been going on in the last year or so. MGM Resorts upgraded it last year before the debut season of the WNBA's Las Vegas Aces, and now the 12,000-seat sports and entertainment stronghold has received new LED displays and lighting, including new 11 by 18 foot video screens on the center hung scoreboard, and glare control technology incorporated into the lighting system, which will be better for spectators and athletes alike. There are also new LED ribbon displays just above the suite line, 182 feet long, which is pretty cool. They've also upgraded seating and signage throughout the venue, and it's added a bunch of back-of-house amenities too, like physical therapy and recovery technology for the Aces and other athletes at Mandalay Bay Event Center for different events. This is pretty great timing because not only does the Aces' second season at Mandalay Bay start on May 26th, and not only will this event center host this year's WNBA All-Star Game on July 27th, but the league, the WNBA, just signed a new multi-year TV deal with CBS Sports that will lead to 40 games being nationally televised, and that starts this summer. And you gotta expect a bunch of those games will be happening right here on the Las Vegas Strip. Back to the showbiz. We had two new shows open on the Strip this past week. Postmodern Jukebox at One Oak at Mirage, and Elvis Presley's Heartbreak Hotel in concert at Harrah's Showroom. And this week, one of the most recognizable shows in Vegas has a very recognizable guest star joining the cast, Vinny Guadagnino, reality TV star from Jersey Shore and the current Double Shot at Love dating show on MTV. He's going to be taking the stage with the Chippendales at the Rio for a whole month starting Friday, April 26th. Of course, I got to talk to Vinny about coming back to Vegas to spend some time and sharing the stage with the Chips. Here's some of that conversation. So for Chippendales, did they reach out to you? How did this kind of connection get made in the first place?
They did, but it kind of made sense because we recently we filmed Jersey Shore in Vegas, mm-hmm. and Chippendales was on one of the episodes. Mm-hmm. The girls went, and it was like a hilarious episode. And Ronnie had been in the show. He did like a guest spot one night.
Right.
And so kind of like, you know, I feel like they knew of me already. But then, like, you know, we started, like, you know, they asked, like, what are the possibilities of me actually doing it? And mm-hmm. I was, like, all about it because I always wanted to be in a Vegas show. You know, I kind of don't know what my lane is for that because, like, you know, what do I do? Am I a DJ or a singer, you know, or a stand-up comedian yet? So I was like, this could work. You know, like, I see it. Like, whatever it is. Like, sometimes you got to create your own lane. You know what I mean? And this is right in my wheelhouse because I always thought that Chippendales was, like a straight-up, like, stripper show, but it's not. It's, like, a theatric, you know, there's little mini shows within the big show.
Right.
And it's, like, visually awesome and dancing and singing and partying. So I'm like, wow, like, this is perfect to be in a Vegas show for me. And it's the energy in the room that makes a show.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, you know, you can have the best show in the world on stage, and if the audience is not engaged, it's like whatever, you know? There's probably not another show with a more engaged audience than Chippendales. Like, it's wild, like, you know? And it's my element because I do a lot of, like, nightclub appearances for, like, 10 years, and it's all women. And it's, like, the best night for, like, guys to come to because, I mean, a guy normally maybe wouldn't be like, oh, I'm going to go watch Vinny from Jersey Shore, but it's, like, I recommend you do because it's all women there, you know? So it reminds it's, like, a similar feel.
Yeah. So what's your prep going to be like? Obviously, you're in great shape, so you got that part down.
I got to get in better shape, that's for sure. I compare it to, like, boxing or something, you know? Like, I'm in, like, the pre-fight phase right now, and then, like, a couple weeks into it, it's going to be like, yo, it's time, you know? It's time to really hone in on things, tighten up. I want to look good for myself, more importantly, so I'm comfortable, but also for the ladies. And that's really it, you know what I mean? Just kind of, like, have some downtime, relax, because I know it's going to be, like, a crazy month.
You said a minute ago you're not a stand-up comedian yet.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going down that road next?
Well, yeah, I've been doing stand-up, comedy for, like, you know, 8 years now, doing improv comedy, sketch comedy. And then naturally I started to just, like, dabble in stand-up. I've hosted a lot of stand-up comedy shows before just to get comfortable on stage. It's kind of hard for me because I'm a name already, so people expect me to, like, headline shows. And I'm like, guys, it takes 20 years for these comedians that you see on TV to be that good, you know, to get an hour. So I don't have that time yet. So I try to just get up there when I can and work on it. And that's it. But I'm a huge comedy nerd, though. You know, again, coming from improv school, sketch comedy school, like, I know a lot of comedians, they're all my friends, podcasting, I listen to podcasts 24 hours a day, so I definitely see myself going in that route somehow.
Yeah. Okay, what is taking over the Strip this week, besides Vinny taking over Chippendales? What's taking over the Strip this week? Well, business-wise, it has to be the International Sign Expo, which brings just over 21,000 attendees coming from all over to the massive Mandalay Bay Convention Center through Friday. It would be cool if it was all about neon signs, right? But it's any kind of signs, graphics, any printed or visual communication. That's what's going down this week on the South Strip. But if you're more concerned about the hot dog eating industry, then you already know that Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest returns to the Brooklyn Bridge at New York, New York on Saturday, April 27th at 3 p.m. The two champion eaters from this event qualify for the famous 4th of July finals, the 103rd edition of the Hot Dog Eating Contest in Coney Island. No, I will not be competing this year. My one big show this week is Saturday night's grand finale of Larger Than Life, the two-year concert residency by the Backstreet Boys at Planet Hollywood's Zappos Theater. I admit I was skeptical of the show when it first was announced. I didn't think that, you know, Britney Spears' success at this same venue was necessarily going to translate into a solid showing by Backstreet Boys, her pop star peers. But the show is a total crowd pleaser. It has broken many sales records, and the group really kind of blossomed while they're in Vegas. They made a new album. They're going on tour this year. So it was a big win, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Backstreet Boys back on the Strip in a couple of years. That's going to do it for this episode of The Sun on the Strip. You can always go back and listen to every episode available on Apple Podcasts or at lasvegassun.com/podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you next week.